Hey everyone, welcome or welcome back to the Summit Church podcast. At the end of this episode, be sure to take a moment to subscribe to our YouTube channel to catch more content that will encourage you in your journey with Jesus. And if this message inspires you, share it with a friend. I hope the next few minutes will be a blessing to you. Enjoy.
When something unexpected happens, it's hard to forget. Let me introduce you to 11 Madison Park. This is a restaurant in New York City, and it is a 3-star Michelin restaurant, which means that it's pretty darn good. Those Michelin stars, though, are an accomplishment that don't exactly define who they are, because in 2017, there was a defining moment for this restaurant. In 2017, it was named the number one best restaurant in the world. It's quite an accomplishment and one they had worked for years toward achieving. And at the height of their restaurant experience, they were seeing incredible things happen in their restaurant. It was a culinary masterpiece every time that they served a dish. The restaurant was run by Daniel Hum and Will Gadara. And they served food like you would expect a place that looks like that to serve. That is to say, it was extravagant. For example, this is one of the meals that they served. This is a pig's bladder that has asparagus that has been cooked inside. They would bring the pig's bladder to your table, and they would cut it open and remove the asparagus and plate this dish tableside. Now, here's what you get. You get a single stalk of asparagus with a cauliflower puree and a black truffle oil, and they call that a meal, which is what you would expect at a place like this, I suppose. I would leave hungry, but that's beside the point. This type of food is what made them the number one restaurant in the world, but it's not actually what they're most well known for. That happened in 2010. It's a normal lunch hour, and Will Gadara is working in the front of house. He's walking around, greeting the guests, spending time with them, asking them about their experience at the restaurant, and he makes his way to a particular table that is full of vacationers. They are culinary vacationers. They have made their way to New York City to experience the food. And they named for him all the restaurants they had been to during their time in New York City. And they enjoyed their meal at 11 Madison Park, but they had one regret. Out of all the things they had eaten while they were in New York City, they had yet to eat a New York City hot dog. Will Gadara is the front of house manager for a Michelin 3-star restaurant. And so he does something unexpected. He beckons a server's assistant and sends them out to the street to the hot dog cart down the road, where they purchase hot dogs for each of the diners at this table. They bring the hot dogs back, and this is where the hard part happens. Will has to convince the chef to plate hot dogs and serve them in his Michelin-starred restaurant. And he's successful. He does. And the hot dogs are served, and they're enjoyed by the folks at the table. And as they're standing to leave, they let him know. This was their last experience dining in New York City, and they've had a phenomenal time, and they've eaten some incredible meals. But this meal is the best one that they've eaten. In fact, the hot dog was the best thing they ate while they were in New York City. Why? Because it was unexpected. Because it was over the top. Because it was more than they ever hoped or thought that they would receive. Will Gadara calls this unreasonable hospitality. And it's what 11 Madison Park would become known for, and that's what would propel them to be one of the best restaurants in the world. When something unexpected happens, it's hard to forget. My name's Ryan, and I'm one of the pastors here at the Summit, and today we're continuing a series called Garden to Garden. Now, I hear some of you coughing out there, and I can relate. Because I spent the last week sick, spent most of the week working from home, trying to figure out how I was going to survive and make it to Sunday. So just a quick question, which one of you got me sick last week? Not blaming anyone, but I'm just saying it was one of you. So here we are, we've made it through, and I am so excited to preach this message in particular because it continues us in this series of looking at how God blesses people. Garden to Garden is a story of how God blesses people, how God sees people flourish in their lives. Now, there are two gardens in Scripture that we're thinking about in particular when we think about Garden to Garden. The first garden is in Genesis chapter 2, the second chapter of the Bible. Now, God creates the heavens and earth. God creates a garden, and he places humanity in the garden where people are in relationship perfectly in unity with God as they live in the garden. And you've probably heard the rest of the story. The wheels come off, things go crazy, and the people live kind of in chaos for the rest of their time. Jesus comes along and begins to change things. And then in Revelation 22, we have a picture painted for us of what it looks like when everything is brought together at the end of time. And the story in Revelation 22 is of the Garden of Eden restored. God, once again, with his people in perfect harmony. And scattered throughout between Genesis 2 and Revelation 22 is story after story using agriculture, agricultural themes, gardens, to tell us stories about how God blesses and helps people flourish. And so today we're going to continue down that pathway, thinking about what it looks like for us to live a flourishing life. Now, to be clear, today's message is not about gardening. Today's message is about the endless days when you have a newborn at home. Today's message is about those times when you have a terrible two-year-old that lasts from 1 to 3. Today's message is about what it's like to live with a teenager who thinks they know everything. Today's message is for people who are going to a job that they don't particularly love. Today's message is for people who have lost that job that they don't particularly love. Today's message is for people who are struggling with parenting their parents. Today's message is for people who are caretakers of someone else in their lives. Today's message is for people who are dealing with unexpected, unwanted news. Today's message is for people who are in need of hope, who need the garden maker, who made the garden in Genesis 2 and the garden in Revelation 22, and who provides us with redemption and restoration in the midst of the difficulties of life. If you find yourself in one of those places, today's message is for you. Now, the need for hope is nothing new. Throughout time, people have found themselves in difficult situations and in need of a word of encouragement. And today, we're going to find that encouragement in the book of Isaiah. Now, to set the stage for you, Isaiah is a prophet. If I were to stand up today and tell you that I am a prophet, I hope that you would question that. I hope that you would wonder if I'm off my rocker a little bit, because sometimes, most of the time actually, when people declare themselves to be prophets in our present age, we find out that they're maybe leading a religious cult, if you will. However, in Isaiah's day, the term prophet was a normal thing to call someone, because the people of Israel were ruled by three things: a prophet, a priest, and a king. Now, the king was exactly what you would expect. The king was the person who was the leader who made decisions for the people. It was the government structure of the people. The people of God decided that they wanted a king, and they said, God, give us a king. And he said, no, you don't really want a king. And they said, but God, please, can we have a king? And God said, well, what I'm trying to tell you is you don't really want a king. And they said, God, we really, really, really think we want a king. And God says, you really, really, really don't need a king, but since you want a king so badly, I will give you a king. And for better or worse, they had a king that ruled over them. But running parallel to the king was the priest. Now, the priest was the person who was the go-between between the people and God. The priest speaks to God for the people. That meant that if you brought a sacrifice to the temple, the priest would make the sacrifice. The priest would be the one who went into the sanctuary, into the Holy of Holies. The priest was the bridge between humanity and deity. And then there's this third kind of arm, and that's the prophet. And this is Isaiah's role. The prophet speaks for God to the people. So let's get this straight. The year is about 700 BC. Isaiah is married, he has children, and his job is to listen for what God might be saying and deliver that message to the people. Now, I don't know if you've paid attention to history much, but people tend to be just a little bit screwed up. They tend to make bad decisions and need to be redirected time and time again. And so Isaiah's job was to listen to God and to go to the people and to point out all the ways that they were falling short and to tell them to live differently, to do differently, and to be better. Isaiah was not always well-liked. His message was not always well-received. And smack dab in the middle of all of this prophecy about Isaiah, we find a story of redemption and restoration. And time again, Isaiah comes back to this idea that in the midst of everything else that's going on, there's a story of hope that's intertwined in the story of God. Today we're going to be in Isaiah chapter 35. Before we get there, let's just kind of back up. Right before Isaiah 35 is Isaiah 34. Okay, so hang with me, all right? Isaiah 34, and Isaiah 34 is a book of the Bible that tells all of the things that people are struggling with, all of the things that are wrong, all of the things they wish were different. If you're looking for a place to go and feel kind of downcast and downtrodden, Isaiah 34 is a great place to start. And in this chapter, Isaiah reminds the people that he sees their plight. He understands the way they're feeling. He gets what's going on. And then in Isaiah 35, he turns the page and he shares a different kind of message with them. This is Isaiah chapter 35, starting in verse 1. Even the wilderness and desert will be glad in those days. The wasteland will rejoice and blossom with spring crocuses. Yes, there will be an abundance of flowers and singing and joy. The deserts will become as green as the mountains of Lebanon, as lovely as Mount Carmel or the plain of Sharon. There the Lord will display his glory, the splendor of our God. Did you catch what Isaiah says? Isaiah says that the desert, the place that's dry and barren and without any vegetation, is suddenly going to become a garden. Flowers are going to grow. It's going to become lush and green, just like the mountains of Lebanon and Mount Carmel. Isaiah is telling them that there is redemption and hope around the corner. Isaiah is offering them a word of encouragement. Here's what he's saying to them. He's saying, difficulty doesn't last forever. He says, I know the things you're dealing with, and I know what you're going through, and I know what it feels like, but it's not going to be like this forever. On the other side, there's hope. On the other side, there's redemption. On the other side, there's a garden in the place that feels like a desert. Author Faith Yuri Cho points out that in moments of pain, they're often the moments that we feel most closely the authentic presence of God. And it's often through enduring these difficult times that we're able to see most clearly who God is and what he's doing in our lives. And what we go through makes what we're going to that much better. Because the garden is even more beautiful when you see it spring up in the middle of the desert. And that's the message that Isaiah has. His message is, life is hard, and yet redemption is coming. The message of Isaiah hinges on this reality, the word picture painted of a garden. But he doesn't move on too soon. He doesn't say, it's going to get better, get over it. Instead, he says, I know it's hard in chapter 34. The beginning of chapter 35, he says, redemption is coming. And then he follows it with this, starting in verse 3. With this news. Now, with this news is important because he's saying, in light of the goodness that's coming, in light of the redemption around the corner, in light of the hope that you can hang your hat on, in light of all of that, strengthen those who have tired hands. And you can relate to that if you felt like there's no way you can ever get everything done. He says, encourage those who have weak knees. And you can relate to that if you've ever wondered if you actually have what it takes to get on the other side of whatever it is that stands in front of you. He says, say to those with fearful hearts, those who are worrying that everything is about to unravel, this is the message from God. Be strong and do not fear, for your God is coming to destroy your enemies. He is coming to save you. And when he comes, he will open the eyes of the blind and unplug the ears of the deaf. If you've ever wanted a renewed sense of joy, it's coming. The lame will leap like a deer, and those who cannot speak will sing for joy. If you're looking for a redo in your life, Isaiah says, endure your current situation because redemption and restoration are coming. There's a garden that's about to spring up in the middle of the desert. The trials and pain that you're experiencing are not without purpose, because in these moments, God gives you strength. And when God gives you strength to endure the hard things in life, redemption has come. This is what it looks like. The rest of verse 6, springs will gush forth in the wilderness, and streams will water the wasteland. The parched ground will become like a pool, and springs of water will satisfy the thirsty land. Marsh grass and reeds and rushes will flourish where desert jackals once lived. All the negative that they had been experiencing suddenly becomes a positive. Everything changes when the desert becomes a garden. There's a word that you likely know and you've experienced that helps frame what we're talking about today. That word is catastrophe. Now, it's an important thing to know that this word is actually a word that we brought over from another language. Some of our words are Latin roots, and some of them are French roots, and some of them are German roots. This word in particular is not from another language in terms of root. It actually is just taken from another language. The word catastrophe has been borrowed from the Greek, and the Greek word was catastrophe. Like, we literally took the word and transplanted it into the English language, but we changed the meaning just a little bit. Because in Greek, the word means a sudden change. A catastrophe is just something that has changed. It's going from point A to point B without warning. And I know how much people love change, and so that's why it became a catastrophe. Because when something changes, we wish it hadn't, and now we view it negatively, and so we now have catastrophe on our hands. This change that happens, this catastrophe, is something that is really easy to relate to, right? I mean, you can think about a catastrophe in your mind. I can think about one that happened recently, the Chiefs Super Bowl parade. What was a moment of joy turned to a moment of sorrow in a heartbeat when gun violence rang out. Or maybe a catastrophe in your mind is something like a natural disaster that you've seen pop up, and there's loss of life and property, and there's devastation. That is a catastrophe. This week, I experienced my own kind of catastrophe. You know, I was sick, and I know it wasn't going to be the best decision in my life, but I did it anyway. I went into the kitchen to get a piece of red velvet cake, and this is what I found. Catastrophe. This is no good, folks. This is not what I had hoped for. Catastrophes catch our attention. They're burned in our mind. They're hard to forget. But what is the opposite of a catastrophe? Author J.R.R. Tolkien is convinced that there needs to be a word to explain when something good happens. And so Tolkien takes another Greek word and helps us create some understanding. That second Greek word is the word eu, E-U. And the definition of that word is well or good. Now, this definition, well or good, can help us. If you apply this, you can see it happen. So let's think about this. When you go to a funeral, they do a eulogy, right? A eulogy. You meaning well or good, logy meaning words or speech, and so you have a good or well word about the person who is deceased, right? I mean, so it tells us something. You also have maybe the word euangelion. The word you means well or good, and angelion means announcement or news, and so it's good news. And we translate that euangelion into the English, that is the gospel. It's literally good news. And so Tolkien reasons that when something good happens, when there's a sudden change that's a positive, that maybe we should have a word to describe that. And so he creates for us this word, the word eucatastrophe, which is a good, sudden change. It's a change for the better. It's the moment that redemption arrives. It's the moment that we see hope when everything seemed hopeless. It's when desolation becomes fruitful. It's when pain becomes beauty. It's a sudden change or turn that Isaiah tells us is coming. There is a eucatastrophe on the horizon. And what does it look like? Here's what Isaiah says in verse 8. He says, "And a great road will go through that once deserted land. It will be named the Highway of Holiness." The network of roads wasn't super strong in 700 BC. It was primarily to move armies and for trade. And yet Isaiah envisions something different. Isaiah envisions a road that goes from where you are to where you want to be. And for the people hearing this, they wanted to be reunited at the temple in Jerusalem. Isaiah's painting a picture for them. And he's saying, you can get where you want to go. What does it mean? It means that we rely on the redemption that God is going to provide. Change is always coming. Our God is a God of eucatastrophe. And so the question we need to struggle with is whether we will pick self-reliance and independence, which leads to disappointment, or if we will realign our lives with the garden maker who wants nothing more than to bring us blessing and flourishing in our lives. Isaiah is telling the people that their troubles will eventually come to an end. And for every person who walked in the doors today, I would imagine that there's something that you would identify as your current desert. What is that thing in your life that feels hopeless? What is that place in your life that you don't see any chance of it getting better? What is that thing that you've held on to and just hoped beyond hope that something good would come out of it, and you can't imagine that it's ever going to happen? That's a place for a eucatastrophe. It's a place for you to hand it over to Jesus. It's a place for you to ask him to enter in and to make a difference. You know, our Wesleyan understanding of salvation is really closely tied to this idea of a garden springing up in a desert, because something unexpected happens in a place that makes an incredible difference. See, salvation, in the way that Wesleyans think about it, isn't a get-out-of-hell-free card. It's a way to live in the here and now that impacts everything you do until you go on to eternity. So maybe it's this, but when you trust in Jesus, the garden has been planted. Or to put it another way, when you trust in Jesus, you have been saved. The plants in the garden aren't forced to grow, but the seeds are planted and they have everything that they need, and they have a choice as to how they will respond, and so do you. In that garden, in that desert place in your life, how do you respond? Do you ask God to enter in and take a step towards Jesus? There are so many ways to signify where we are on this pathway. And this is the first place for many of us to start, to simply say, it's time for me to put Jesus first in an area of my life. You know, we're going to have an opportunity for people to do that on Easter Sunday. We're actually baptizing people in this room on Easter Sunday who want to take that step towards Jesus, to go public in their relationship. Or you know what? Here's something else. Maybe you got baptized a really long time ago and you've lived a lot of life since then. And this is an opportunity for you to reaffirm your baptism as a reminder of the first place that Jesus serves in your life. We have a great group of people already signed up to do that. Maybe that's a first step for you to take as you think about how you might allow the desert places in your life to become a garden. Number two is this: when you trust in Jesus, the garden is being tended. Or to put it another way, when you trust in Jesus, you are being saved. Pastor and theologian John Wesley says it this way. He says, salvation is both instantaneous and it's gradual. It's like planting a garden, right? You sow the seeds and everything's different. But there's this process of growing and becoming and changing that actually leads us to fruitfulness. That's the whole idea behind so much more that we kicked off the beginning of the year with. The idea was to identify places that we can take steps because we're all in progress. And the third thing is this: when you trust in Jesus, the harvest will come. Or to put it another way, when you trust in Jesus, you will be saved. This is the culmination of your earthly life, that on the other side, the desert place will become a garden. On the screen behind me is a picture of the driest place on earth. It's called the Atacama Desert. It's in Chile, and it's situated between the Andes Mountains and a small coastal mountain range. And there are weather stations installed throughout this desert, and there are weather stations in this desert that have never in their history recorded a rainfall. There's literally no chance that a place like this should be bursting with greenery or be full of flowers, and running streams of water are an absolute no. But that's exactly what Isaiah promises. That's exactly the promise that God gives us. That redemption for humanity is just around the corner. That flourishing and blessing are yours. You know, when something unexpected happens, it's hard to forget. And sometimes it's a stalk of asparagus in a pig's bladder. And other times, it's the grace of God sinking down deep in your heart and in your life, and breathing newness and freshness and life into the places that you never thought it was possible. So today, a you catastrophe is waiting. And I wonder, how will you respond? Will you pray with me? Heavenly Father, we see in Isaiah's prophecy today that redemption is always close. Even when it feels away, it's just around the corner. Even when it feels impossible, it's something you can do. You can make gardens in the desert. You can bring dead things to life. You can bring hope to hopelessness. And that's what you desire in our lives. Thank you. Thank you for loving us enough to give us that opportunity. We pray this in Jesus' name.